Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Back in the 1950s, young Elmore Leonard sold his first dozen stories for 2 cents a word out of his back pocket while he wrote ads for Chevrolet. Westerns then, because that's what sold. Eventually, he went to straight-up thrillers, and the rest is history. Glitz, Get Shorty, Out of Sight, more than 40 in print. Half have gone to Hollywood and the big screen. His latest, Road Dogs, book 43, crackles with sex, friendship, guns, games, betrayal, and a full cast of suave, unsavory characters. The New York Times calls him the greatest living writer of crime fiction. The former poet laureate of the United States, Robert Pinsky, no less, calls him a virtuoso storyteller. We'll hear from Pinsky on Leonard here and from the master himself this hour, On Point crime writer Elmore Leonard. You can join the conversation. Have you been along for the Elmore Leonard crime fiction ride? Killshot, Be Cool, Big Bounce, Maximum Bob, and a whole lot more. What makes Leonard's tales work? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. For a little prequel backstory to the new book, Road Dogs, here from Elmore Leonard's 1996 book, Out of Sight, made into a film in 1998, starring George Clooney as Jack Foley, good-natured serial bank robber. In this clip from Out of Sight, he's in the midst of committing one of his 127 career bank robberies. He's just stepped up to the teller at SunTrust Bank.
Take one of those big envelopes and put as many hundreds, 50s, and 20s as you can pack into it. Nothing with bank straps or rubber bands. I don't want any dive packs. I don't want any bait money. Start with the second drawer and then the one over there underneath the money counter. It's okay. Come on, Loretta. The key's right there next to you. Is this your first time being around? You're doing great. Just smile, Loretta, so you don't look like you're being held up. You got a very pretty smile. All right. I think that'll do it, Loretta. Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too.
That was then and Out of Sight. These days, it's Road Dogs, his latest book just out this month. Joining me now from Detroit is Elmore Leonard, best-selling author, crime fiction master. Road Dogs, a terrific read. Elmore Leonard, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Tom, thank you.
And we will hear from the former poet laureate of the United States, Robert Pinsky, in this hour. He's kind of in love with your latest book.
Wow.
What's a road dog, sir?
A road dog, it's a prison relationship between, without joining a gang, it's a couple of inmates who watch each other's back, who look out for each other. That's essentially what it is.
To a point, I guess, would be the point of this book.
That's right. I hadn't even realized that might be the theme. I'm not used to. I don't begin with a theme. I don't get that deep into it because I'm making up the book as I go along. I assemble the characters and they have their trials. Scenes where they try out, and then I go with the ones who can talk, and that's the way I do it. Then make it up the rest of it.
Well, maybe the theme just comes from somewhere in that pen you sit and write longhand with. Everybody has loved them for a long time, and they're still at it. Stephen King also reviewed Road Dogs. He says, you know from the first sentence that you're in the hands of the original Daddy Cool. That would be you, Elmore Leonard. Starts good, yeah. Gets a whole lot better, he writes. And at 83, you are 83 now, he says, this is your best in years. Did you feel that in your bones as you wrote it?
You see, the three books previous took place in the 40s and one in the 30s, and those were considered historical novels for some reason. Because I don't think of them as historical since I was there.
It's just childhood. You know,
I was around then.
Right. So just childhood for you, but I really wondered in reading this because, I mean, it's still, you're 83, and this crackles with all the same kind of tension, including sexual tension. That's been your trademark all along. Does it become a stretch at a certain point, or is it still just there for you?
You have to keep up. You keep up with what's going on in the world. And phrases. I don't use everything that teenagers, the way they would talk necessarily. I think I've avoided teenagers in my books because of that reason. But you just stay awake and listen and watch what's going on.
We'll talk about exactly how you do that. Do us a favor, and for those who haven't picked up Road Dogs, give us the Elmore Leonard summary of your latest, your 43rd thriller, Mr. Leonard.
A summary. Well, I'm not sure how to. When I begin to tell what a book of mine is about, I always go too far.
It's going to be the whole book.
Yeah. But it's about a couple of prison inmates who are buddies inside who get together outside. One of Kundo Ray, who is a habitual criminal, he pays the way of Jack, he pays a lawyer for Jack Foley. To get him out of prison, spends $30,000, and then on the outside in Venice, California, they would appear to be big buddies, but mm-hmm. Kundo Ray's girlfriend, who is, poses as his wife, mm-hmm. Dawn Navarro, who's a psychic, she's between them, and she is the one who will cause trouble.
Now, we heard the clip at the top of the hour there from George Clooney in Out of Sight. And I have read that you still had George Clooney, not just your character Jack Foley, but Clooney himself in mind as you wrote Road Dogs. You've had so many of your books made into movies. Do the movie stars start to inhabit your imagination?
That's the first one. I thought I'll see if I can picture George Clooney in this one as I wrote it, and it worked. I thought he was great for the part. And so I sent him the book because I had heard he read a manuscript. And he didn't read the manuscript, but he was sent a manuscript. And he said, oh, I don't want to play that part again. Mm. So then when the book came out a couple of weeks ago, I sent him the book and I inscribed it, George, Jack Foley's looking for you. And with the New York Times review, Daily Review, not the one Robert Pinsky wrote for this coming Sunday, but a very good review, and I'm hoping he'll read it.
And maybe get into it again. I have to admit, when I cracked it open, I wasn't prepared. I didn't know how you sometimes wove earlier characters in here. I hadn't read Out of Sight, but like many others, I had seen the movie with George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez. He plays the bank robber who gets out. She plays the U.S. Marshal, Karen Sisko. He ends up in the trunk. Things get a little hot and heavy before they get before law enforcement ensues.
They talk about movies too,
right? As many of your characters do.
They love movies.
Love movies. Karen Sisko's been around from an earlier short story. Karen makes out in your. In your work, and there was the TV, short-lived TV series, Karen Sisko.
Karen Sisko went, six installments.
I have to say that I did catch a little bit of. I absolutely adored it. It was incredible with Carla, what is it, Gugino? Is that how you say it, is Karen Sisko?
Carla Gugino.
I'm not sure, but were you involved with that, with the TV, or was that on down the stream?
No, not at all. But they couldn't. They weren't sure about her character, who she was playing, and I think they kept changing it each time. Her character would be a little bit different, and if they had settled on that, I think it might have worked.
I wish you'd take us a little bit into this. Is the kind of wonderful complexity that you bring. Here's a U.S. Marshal who has a fling and maybe more with a 127-time bank robber before she busts him. Take us inside your vision of Karen Sisko, that kind of character.
Well, she's, I think maybe she should have been a boy. I mean, I think she's a girl who played touch football and, doesn't throw like a girl and so on. There's even a reference to her running in Road Dogs, where he has seen her running and she runs. And then he sees Don Navarro run.
Dawn,
brief scene, and he says, and he thinks Dawn Navarro runs like a girl.
But one of them says, come in here and I'll show you.
Karen Sisko, however, is quite feminine. There's no question about that.
Right. He says, you run like a boy at some point, I think. And she says, come in here and I'll show you what kind of girl
I am.
Oh,
yeah, right.
And we're deep in the hot and heavy. You've had so many play in your films. I mean, Paul Newman and Burt Lancaster and Clint Eastwood, Robert Duvall, and, you know, women Uma Thurman and Jennifer Lopez in Out of Sight. John Travolta, famously, Samuel Jackson. And
Twice.
But what, Clooney, the only one who really got inside the character and started to own it when you sat down to write next time?
Yeah, I think so. He's the only one. Although Tarantino was good, because when he was first proposed for the Get Shorty.
Yeah.
When he was first proposed for that, I thought Pulp Fiction hadn't been released yet, mm-hmm. and I thought, oh my God! I kept thinking of him in Look Who's Talking, you know, where the baby the baby talk pictures.
But he had the stuff.
Baby talking pictures, and I thought, oh no, no! But then they showed me Pulp Fiction, and I thought, wow, he's perfect for it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with master crime thriller writer Elmore Leonard about his 43rd book, just out, Road Dogs. Here's a scene from the 1995 film Get Shorty, that was taken straight out of chapter one in Elmore Leonard's book of the same name. John Travolta plays Chili Palmer, a Miami gangster who's looking for his black leather jacket at a restaurant's coat check.
Where's my coat?
It's not one of these.
Well, do you see a black leather jacket, fingertip length, like the one Pacino wore in Serpico? Because if you don't, you owe me $379.
Well, maybe you didn't see the sign.
I seen the sign, but I didn't come to sunny Florida to freeze my ass off. You got that? So you either find my coat or you give me the $379 that my ex-wife paid for it at Alexander's.
Yeah, and there we go. John Travolta, Chili Palmer in Get Shorty, and there's a lot more since then. The latest is Road Dogs. We'll be joined in a few minutes by Robert Pinsky, former U.S. Poet Laureate. Elmore Leonard joins us from Detroit, and we've got fans for you, Mr. Leonard. Deirdre, in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the air with Elmore Leonard.
Hi there. How are you? I am
absolutely
loving this. It is such an honor. My father has always been an avid reader and a huge Elmore Leonard fan, and he has gifted me with a love of your books, and they have been a staple of every single family vacation we have ever taken. And I've got to say, those books never make it in the bin for a garage sale. They are just over and over. And I just am honored to say hello and thank you very much.
Well, thank you. That's great to hear such kind words. Thank you.
Your books as family heirlooms, Elmore Leonard.
Yeah, that's
pretty
no
good.
No garage sales.
No garage sales. Thank you.
No.
Let's get one more right here from Simsbury, Connecticut. Elaine, you're on the air with Elmore Leonard.
Hi. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Mr. Leonard, I've been a fan of yours for over 20 years. I don't know how many books of yours I've read, but probably most of them. And one of the things I like most about them is the fact that you make the women the smartest people in the room. And I just love that. Because that's usually the case with crime thrillers.
There was a review in a Detroit paper where a friend of mine who reviewed the book, a woman, said, I don't know who this woman is in the book. She looks like she was a girlfriend of Mickey Spillane. And I thought, I better look at my women a little more closely. And I did then, and I started thinking of them not simply as the girl in the book, but as a human being, you know.
And how far back was that, Elmore Leonard, when you made that?
That was probably 25 years ago, yeah.
And this time out, you've got Dawn Navarro back. She's not only smart and ambitious, but you've gifted her with kind of sixth sense. She is or professes to be psychic.
Well, the first book she was in, I wasn't sure if she was psychic. She played a good game. She'd be talking to someone on the phone in the evening and say, turn your lamp on. I can't see you. You know, and that would shake people up a little bit. And they would think, oh, God, she must be psychic. So,
How have you come to think about male characters, male intelligence versus female intelligence, as you've waded deeper in over those 20 years?
Well, the women in the book have somehow demonstrated that they're smarter than the guys, and I can't help that. Maybe they are. Maybe the ones I pick out are anyway. They have minds of their own. Of course, even all of my characters do. They start doing things that I'm not. That surprises me. So I let them pretty much do what they want. As I'm thinking of the story scene by scene, making it up as I go along. And sometimes I'll just start to wander a little too far away and then have to bring it back.
They're very free. They're willful and free and smart,
yes,
as
they
whips.
Are. Yeah.
I wonder if you would do us the honor of reading a little bit for us from Road Dogs. There's a reading early on here where your character, Kundo Ray, he's in the big house in Florida. His kind of sidekick has more or less bribed the guards there. So he's got an office job, access to a telephone. He can reverse charges and call out to California, where his life of crime has scored him several lovely large homes, as he calls them, and Dawn, his sort of wife, who is supposed to be waiting chastely for him, and he is always calling in to check up on that until she gets sick of it right here. Could you read a little bit for us?
Yeah, that's his main concern.
Yeah.
In his quiet corner of the office, Kundo would hear Dawn's voice accept the charge, and he'd ask, "Are you being a saint?" Dawn would say, "Of course I am." Or she would vary her answer and say, "Aren't you my love?" Or sometimes, "Aren't you my undying love?" Kundo believed saints never got laid, so he'd say, "You swear to Almighty God you being a saint for me?" "I swear to God I'm being a saint. For me." "Yes, for you." "I want to hear it so I believe it." After several months of this, Dawn began to say, without raising her voice or showing any strain, "How many times do I have to tell you, yes, I'm being a saint for you? Your tone of voice doesn't convince me, because you make me say it over and over." Now there was a hint of strain. "Will you please stop asking me if I'm being a saint?" One day, still during Kundo's first year inside, Dawn said, "If you ask me that again, I swear I'll hang up the phone. I won't be here the next time you call. I'll vanish, and you'll never hear my voice again as long as you live. If you don't believe me, ask if I'm being a saint. I dare you."
Elmore Leonard.
He believed her.
He even believed she was. Yeah, he believed she was being chased, and boy, yes, was he wrong. And things get very wild and woolly between the sheets and beyond before this is all over in the latest Road Dogs from Elmore Leonard. And Elmore Leonard joins us from Detroit, where he's lived pretty much all his life. And if I may, I'd like to bring on a pretty big admirer, if the forthcoming review in the New York Times is any indication, who also happens to be the former poet laureate of the United States, our friend here at On Point, Robert Pinsky. He joins us from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Bob Pinsky, thanks very much for being here.
Hiya, Tom.
So I'm reading your review in advance of its publication, and wow, you love this guy. Virtuoso storyteller. He's a crime thriller writer. So tell us, poet laureate, we would love to get a little bit of your exegesis here. How do you read Dutch Leonard?
I was proud of the review because, unlike the many favorable reviews that Leonard's accumulated in his life, I tried to concentrate on what the book is about. Mm-hmm. And I thought, as that passage you just read shows, it's about trust, whether it exists, whether it is ever anything but stupid. And it's a great subject. And I thought I would give Elmore Leonard credit for writing books that are not just strong in ear and style, but are about things. And it's something I think about in my life, is who do I trust and how much.
You may have heard him say, as we're speaking today with Elmore Leonard from Detroit, that he actually doesn't start out with a great theme in mind, but it clearly emerges in this book, and you pick it up. I mean, you ask in your review, you know, you have him asking through this book, do love, friendship, and loyalty exist? Are they actually, really and truly out there. I won't give away your answer to that question, but how do you see him developing that theme in Road Dogs, Robert Pinsker?
I don't think John Keats started out with great themes in mind either, or Emily Dickinson or Wallace Stevens. I think that anybody who writes by ear, which is most poets, is likely to start out with something that sounds interesting in mind or sounds good. Milton started out with a great theme in mind, but he did a lot of training by first writing things that just he tried to make sound real good. But once you get, I've never really made characters in a sense, but I assume once you get characters going and you're listening to them talk to one another and to themselves, I assume that the themes of life, let's not say if they're great or small, but one of the main themes in life is who do you trust and how much?
Elmore Leonard, we've got the former poet laureate of the United States putting up there in the company of Milton and Keats for a little examination. How's it feel?
Could I speak to Robert directly?
Please do.
Yeah, please do, Doug.
Oh, how did you come to review this book?
Many years ago, I told the New York Times that I wanted to review anything but books of poetry or books about poetry. So I've done baseball books. I did the Joan Didion memoir. I did Philip Roth's book about his dad, Patrimony. So I tell them I want them to surprise me. And I'd read your work before, so some smart editor at the Times took a good guess.
Well, I was knocked over when I read it. I couldn't believe it.
Well, that's great. That's great.
One of the best reviews I've ever had.
Now, in what sense
Thank
do you use the word best?
Yeah, well, what do you mean by best? Well, you've had a few, so what does it mean? It's smart, that's for sure.
Yes.
I was just a little bit there. Shameful fishing.
Well, we got it. It came right up.
But it reminded me of a screenwriter who said, I read your book. He was going to do the screenplay. He said, I read the book first, and then I read it again to make sure what the theme of the book is. And I said, well, what is the theme? I had to ask him. And he said, you don't know what the theme of your book is? Because evidently, for some reason, that's important in Hollywood.
Huh.
Why, I don't know.
I'm glad.
But I don't think of theme.
Yeah. My great teacher, Francis Ferguson, who wrote, I think, a great book called The Idea of a Theater that I think is good instructions for film writing or poems or fiction. Francis, who never had a PhD, he followed the Moscow Art Theater. He never talked about themes. He talked about action. What's the action?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And he trained us to express it as a definitive. And in a way, I'd say the action of this Road Dogs is an important action. It's to find out who you trust and how much.
Elmore Leonard, Robert Pinsker pulls out of here some really great questions, thematic or otherwise. They're as big as it gets. And I know his answer, having read the review, but let me put some of the questions to you. I mean, these are just huge. And he finds them right in the middle of your crime thriller, Can a Grown Person Change? That's as big as it gets. Specifically, can a man abandon an expertise that wins him respect but makes a mess of his life? A lot of hedge fund guys asking themselves that. Can anybody...
Will he ever rob another bank?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea. I think he might in time. Why not?
Jack Foley here. Can anybody trust anybody? Is love ever true? Is friendship ever real? Is respect possible between a man and a woman? Talk about fundamental. Answer just one of those for us.
Well, I believe in love, true love between a man and a woman. I'm experiencing it now. I have experienced it before. I think it's great to be in love.
What about loyalty? Is it real when it gets tested? How deep does it go?
Well, I don't know. I would be loyal. I am loyal.
Yeah. Speaking for myself, I've experienced all of those things. Mm. And whenever you experience them, you're also somewhat afraid, you know, because I quote a joke. The New York Times wouldn't let me put the joke in its real, right form. But I basically said that Road Dogs is in the same geography, being in Venice, L.A., mm-hmm. and the same moral geography as the famous joke about how do you say, I don't know if I can say it on radio, the Times wouldn't even let me say, how do you say an insult rhyming with truck do?
Mm-hmm.
The Times told me I couldn't do that.
Okay.
But how do you say that
in L.A.
rhyming with truck do in L.A.? And the answer to that, to me, very old classic joke is, trust me. And that's the terrain that I found in this book was I have experienced loyalty. I hope I express loyalty, and I've been loyal in my life. I've been married to the same person for 40-something years, I have very good friends I've had for almost that long. But there's always an element of I think there's always at least a slight element of fear or risk.
Sure.
When you trust people.
What will the price be? Elmore Leonard, you're the crime writing master. Do you think these questions are different for crooks? Are they constitutionally different when it comes to loyalty, friendship, love?
Well, I don't think they ever come up.
Really? Crooks don't love? They don't have friendship?
Well, yeah, no, but who asks them? Who asks them if they're loyal or so on?
Well, you don't have to ask. You can just watch and wait long enough and see, can't you?
Well, yeah, you can tell by that, by observation. But I don't know. I don't get into this. I didn't know that this is what the book was about. I said, oh, really? Wow. And that's what interests me about it. It's there because I think I've been writing books long enough that I have to. There is a theme that's going to come out of what I'm writing. As sure as there's a beginning, middle, and an end, you're taking something and working it out, figuring it out as the way these characters react to their situations.
Anything that's any good is about something. I think it's true of jokes, too. I like the word about. This doesn't mean spot on or consciously, but it's around. It's about. It's about something. And I enjoy reading the Elmore Leonard's work. I'll read it again any time because it sounds good, sounds convincing, and I like the action in it. You know, it's like I say, I was trained with that word of action. I don't think you have to make the action into a recipe, but you know it's there. It's what makes one paragraph or character go with another.
Mm-hmm. Robert Pinsky and Elmore Leonard. What a great pairing. We're glad the Times put it together. Elmore Leonard, a last thought or question for the Poet Laureate before we have to say goodbye to him?
I've tried to write poetry. No, I haven't tried to write poetry because I don't know how to begin. I don't know what... I think of things that interest me, but how do you begin? What's the sound? I'm so aware of the sound of my novels, but I can't decide what poetry that I would write would sound like.
That's too good a question to let go.
I would want it to have a beat. I would want it to have a rhythm, you know.
Yep. Robert Pinsky, if you'd hold that, we have to take a break, and I don't want to lose you without an answer to that. Can you hang on for just a couple minutes?
Sure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with crime thriller writer Elmore Leonard. His latest is Road Dogs. Here's a clip from the short-lived 2003 ABC TV series Karen Sisko, based on Elmore Leonard's character in Out of Sight. Karen's new boyfriend here has been trying to guess what she does for a living. As a sometime bank robber, he's not sure how he feels about it once he figures it out. Here's Patrick Dempsey as Carl and Carla Gugino as Karen Sisko.
You're a cop.
U.S. Marshal.
So much for school teacher.
What is that exactly? What do you do, the marshals?
Warrants, mostly. We go after fugitives, parole violators.
You good at it?
I'm good at it. I catch the bad guys and put them away. I like catching the bad guys. It's my choice.
Karen Sisko from the short-lived ABC television series. Elmore Leonard is with us from Detroit, Michigan. Former U.S. Poet Laureate Robert Pinsky is with us from Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Robert Pinsky, the question from the thriller writer to you is, how do poets start? And I guess the question everybody will wonder when he asked that is, do you hear, read poetry in Elmore Leonard's work, even if he doesn't see it that way?
I think most of the really good fiction writers have read poetry and studied it. It's part of your language. You start with the sound. I mean, I have my touchstone is an interview with the great saxophone player Dexter Gordon. Mm. They asked him, where do you get your inspiration? And the first two words out of Dexter's mouth were Lester Young. Talked about all the music he'd heard as a kid. And you prime the pump by listening to something good. I mean, here's a super short poem by William Carlos Williams. Now they're resting in the fine work with pitch and copper. He's looking at roofers, thinking about work. Now they're resting in the fleckless light, separately in unison, like the sacks of sifted stone stacked regularly by twos about the flat roof, ready after lunch to be open and strewn. The copper in 8-foot strips has been beaten lengthwise down the center at right angles, lies ready to edge the coping. One still chewing picks up a copper strip and runs his eye along it. And it's easy to compare that. I just opened Road Dogs at Random, and he's got Foley in prison playing basketball with these black guys, and Foley pressing each other hands in the face, talking trash. Foley showing his moves, his jukes, faking guys out of their jocks, passing behind his back, throwing in swishers all net with either hand. Kundo watched. And, you know,
yeah, sure.
Principle in all art. You have a short thing after a long thing. Kundo watched.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's great.
I don't think Elmore Leonard was thinking consciously about jukes and jocks, but it sounds good.
Elmore, are you a poet?
No, I'm not. No, but
the
I
poet
I
laureate do says you may be.
Well,
no, I didn't say that.
Oh, well, okay, but it sure reads like poetry.
The principle's the same.
Yeah, yeah,
I do. Okay, make it sound good.
Yeah.
No, I do understand the short Kundo watched that beat. Mm-hmm. That comes after the 100 words or whatever it is. Not 100 words, lines.
Yeah. There's another passage which Robert Pinsky quotes in his review, but it's got a lot of wonderful rhythm to it as well. Here's Dawn Navarro. She'd fire without cocking it, unless she might have a few things to say first. Then cock the gun for effect just before she says, "So long, Jack, it's been." And it goes on, but there's almost a little haiku going there.
Yeah, but Elmore Leonard, I accuse you of making a lot of your characters writers. They think about what they're going to say. They
do.
Like screenwriters.
Well,
she's fantasizing or anticipating. Will she say, "It's been fun, a ball. It's been nice knowing you. It's been nice taking showers with you."
And it's while I'm thinking of what she should be saying, what she wants to say, you know. I thought, well, what the heck? Why not let her wonder about it?
I read somewhere that way back, we're talking 1930s here, you read Elmore Leonard, All Quiet on the Western Front, in serialization in the Detroit Times. Now, that's not exactly poetry, but what about your influences?
Well, I think I saw the picture first because it came out in 1930. And then when it appeared in the Detroit Times, I read most of it, and from that decided to write a play that we would put on in the fifth grade at Blessed Sacrament Academy. And we put it on, and there was one black kid in the room, and I was up from Memphis, and I didn't have any black friends, so I made him a German. He was on the other side of the classroom with
Wow.
And then they crawl under the desks and become trapped in, on barbed wire, caught on the wire, and they have to be rescued by the coward in the group. I knew enough to do that anyway.
Have you read poetry or just absorbed your rhythm, your language from the ether, the world?
Well, poets send me books of it, and I read it, and I wonder. How do you get into it? I don't understand that. Do you think of a subject? Do you think of a person? Do you think of a situation? And is there anything to meter? Do you have to know meter? I wouldn't think so. But I would like to be able to write something poetic, but I read it, say, in the New Yorker. I'll read little poems And I wonder, I don't get it. I don't get it. Most of the time, I don't get it.
Poet Pinsky, what do you say to the crime writer?
I usually don't get it in the New Yorker either. I tend to read poetry mostly by dead people. It's been filtered out better over a longer time, and I'm sympathetic to anybody who's editing poetry with the New Yorker. It's not easy to find a good poem every week. Writing good poems is about the hardest thing in the world to do. I think you start with things you really love. Start with Shakespeare or Keats or Emily Dickinson, whatever it is you really think is just terrific, just great. And proceed from there. My advice to people when they say, how do you get poetry? I say, read it aloud. I never tell anybody, read new work or read my work. I've edited a lot of anthologies, and sometimes people complain that I'm rather heavy on the dead people. They're hard to beat when it comes to poetry.
Yeah.
So I would start with some good anthology. It would be my advice to a terrific writer or to anybody at all. And read Gerard Manley Hopkins. Read Elizabeth Bishop. Read whatever somebody has told you is good or something you can remember liking a lot at some point in your life.
I did buy Emily Dickinson a book of her poetry and Hopkins. I read Hopkins, but I just can't get into it. I don't know why.
It's amazing, but I think it's in you. Robert Pinsky, you're a great good reader and a great good sport for joining us this hour. We're so grateful to you. It's been great to hear Leonard and Pinsky.
One last
sir. Yeah.
Like Faulkner said, when somebody said, I've read your book four times but can't understand it, my advice would get about reading Emily Dickinson, read it again.
All right, I will.
Find one you like a lot or a little and read it aloud. It's a real pleasure talking to you. It was fun to read the book and to write the review.
Advice received. Robert Pinsky.
Thank you.
Former U.S. Poet Laureate. Thank you. The review on Road Dogs, A Twisting Tale of Seduction and Betrayal, will be in the New York Times Book Review this Sunday. Wow, Elmore Leonard, that was really a treat to have you two.
That was a treat. I'll say it was.
That's just great.
I can't believe it.
We've been keeping a lot of listeners waiting. If I may, let's turn to some of them. Linda in Beverly, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Elmore Leonard.
Oh, thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I do read Elmer Leonard's books, and I love Shorty. I love Chili. But I sometimes would think about reading mysteries as sort of a guilty pleasure because my tendency is to read, novels and, again, looking for answers to the big questions in life. And we look in so many different places, movies, even television shows, perhaps not, who's going to be the next big star in America. But I watch a program by the name of House about a doctor, and it really demonstrates some of the questions that he is asking because he's a tormented soul, and consequently you can get inside someone's head. And last night's theme was about whether people can change, just as you're talking about now. And that's what we look for, because one of his patients was a woman who was, sex and rock and roll, drug, sex, and rock and roll, and she became a Hasidic Jew. And Dr. House doesn't think anybody can change that much. And discussion about change.
Linda, let me pick it up, if I may, and thank you so much for that. But let's just pick it up with our crime thriller master. Elmer Leonard, what about you? You think about characters over
my
time.
My wife and I, we watch House, too. She loves House. And they're always a very complicated diagnosis to be had in whatever the ailment is.
You're 83. And, you've written so many books. You've followed characters through books. So what's your opinion? Can a grown person really change?
Well, yes. Although you don't see it often. When you see old men talking my age, but I don't associate with many old men. I just associate with most of my friends are in their 50s, and you see how they become crotchety and set in their ways. You go to a home where a lot of a retirement home, and they're all living there, and the music, and here's this, they hire this guy to play the piano,
yeah,
and he's playing these old corny tunes,
mm-hmm,
and I think, well, look, I'm 83, and I threw those out a long time ago. I listened to Frank Sinatra. Why isn't he doing something like that? Why aren't they just playing records? You know,
at least.
Why don't they keep up?
Keep up, please.
Yeah.
Let's get some more. Linda, thank you for your call. Maggie in Florence, South Carolina. You're on the air with Elmore Leonard.
Hi. Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. Hearing Mr. Leonard talk about his character, Kundo Ray, put me in mind of my very favorite Elmore Leonard book, in which I think Kundo makes his first appearance, which is the book La Brava.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I've always thought that it was the most cinematic of all Mr. Leonard's books, and yet we've never seen it made into a movie. And I wondered if we could, and it's just crying out to be made into a movie. It's actually kind of about the movies. And I wondered if he could tell us why we've never seen that realized on the screen.
I have no idea. I'm not even sure it's ever been optioned. Maybe it has. But I thought it would sell to the movies pretty quickly, but it didn't for some reason.
Kundo Ray comes out of Cuba. Fidel Castro let a bunch of prisoners.
Yeah,
and he makes it to the United States. Makes a fortune. We learn finally. How does it work when you put out a new book? If Hollywood's knocking at your door, how do you know it? They come through your agent. They drive up. What happens?
Well, my I have an agent in Hollywood who handles that, and he'll not go to a studio. He'll go to a director or a star who he thinks would really work in this particular book. But then, of course, all of the studios know about the book almost immediately.
Sure.
Because someone in the publisher's organization gets the copy out, sells it or gives it to a friend in Hollywood or whatever. And so they know about it. And then someone writes coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And you read what the story is about. And I've read coverage of mine and not recognized the book.
I mean, there's summary of it.
There's a lot. Yes, yeah. There's so much coverage, it
yeah.
becomes covered.
Have you figured out what Hollywood bites on and what it doesn't? I mean, they've bitten so many times on your book, 20 times, I guess, or more. Have you got a theory of what they grab and what they don't?
No, because it changes all the time. Now it's, Night at the Museum? And that made $75 million over the past weekend.
Mm.
And the other one about the big, I don't know what they're called, the humans that are, well, they're not real. They're, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I'm not up either, but monsters of some kind out there.
Yeah, right.
But an awful lot of yours up on the screen. You know, I couldn't help but think this, in these days, as we think about, you're in Detroit, have been there for a long, long time, as we think about the possibility of General Motors imminently declaring bankruptcy. Way back when you were writing short stories for 2 cents a word, as I read, you were also writing advertisements for Chevy, Chevrolet.
Yes.
And so I wonder what goes through your mind as you have seen GM's troubles and now see it on the brink of bankruptcy. How's that hit a former Chevy ad writer?
Well, it's been a gradual thing. First of all, I didn't like writing ads at all. I didn't care for the way we had to write them. So once in a while, I could cut loose and write a truck ad that had some grit to it. But we had to write, the car ads had to be rather cute, and I have trouble writing cute. So I was glad, finally, after six and a half or seven years, to get out of the agency and then concentrate on fiction, because I used to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to write before going to work. And I wrote about 30 short stories and 5 books that way, down in the basement. In the living room, before going to work. And I could write two pages in 2 hours because I didn't know any better. Now it takes me all day to write 3.
And I'm reading here that you're doing something next on Somali pirates. Is that true?
Yeah. I have a woman who's a documentary filmmaker, and she's out in a trawler to meet pirates and find out what their story is, and she likes them. She thinks, oh, these guys, they have to do this because of the fact that they can't fish anymore for various reasons. But then she finds out, no, as her assistant tells her, you know, a criminal is a criminal. If they're committing criminal acts, they're criminals.
So is it a thriller you would make out of that?
It's a thriller once we get into Al-Qaeda and other things that are moving around in the sea out there.
And the hook is in already. Elmore Leonard's new book, his latest, is Road Dogs. It's really been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, Mr. Leonard. Thank you so very much for being with us today from Detroit.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jupp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileena Mata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby. Our senior producer is Wynn Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.